Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up later this hour, we have Wren Wechsler, who is a New Yorker writer for 20 years on his body of writing on human rights. We also have Joe Nocera on Joe Paterno, the New York Times columnist, thinks any central Pennsylvania Catholic like Paterno must have known full well what he was allegedly covering up, and will explain why Nocera brings his Catholicism into it. But first, we continue our coverage of Occupy Wall Street and the legal developments coming out of attempts here and across the country to evict protesters or their tents from their encampments. WNYC's Bob Henley has been here. He's been covering the story. And Heidi Boghossian, executive director of the National Lawyers Guild, which is providing legal support to the movement. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Heidi, welcome to WNYC.
Great to be here.
And before we get into the lawsuits and any precedents that may have been set in a New York courtroom yesterday, Bob, what's happening at Zuccotti Park this morning, the morning after the first night without tents and tarps and sleeping bags?
Well, of course, building the reporting by Alex Goldmark, who was out there this morning. We just had a conversation before I came on. Overnight, there were about 30 individuals that managed to be throughout the night who are associated with Occupy Wall Street. There's a heavy presence of private security guards now, and they're augmenting the police presence. Basically, the space is open, and the police are enforcing Brookfield's rules for using the park, which, of course, as we found out in court yesterday, were only put in place after Occupy Wall Street started their action. And so basically it's being run according to what Judge Stallman signed off on last night.
Heidi, is it your understanding that the city gave the protesters any specific notice that they had to remove their tents, or the police would come and remove them for them, or did the cops just come in and do it?
My understanding is they gave notice, but given that they had been allowed to have the tents for so long, and given that we found out these laws were actually put in place, the private laws for the park, after the protesters had been there, it's what we're seeing around the country. Local ordinances or discretionary use of antiquated laws or new laws being created basically to crack down on political speech, under the guise often of using safety or different concerns, sanitation concerns, when really we feel that's being a ruse to get people to move.
Was it really a crackdown on political speech, or was it a crackdown on the way the park was being used that was making it dirty and unsanitary and unsafe and was stopping other people from also using it for political speech or for whatever, because they let the people back into the park immediately to continue their political speech?
Well, I think when it gets to a point where it's drawing so much attention from the media, where people are coming, literally tourists are coming every day to see, I talked to people who came there for the first time and said, I expected to see a dirty, filthy park, but I'm really excited by the message. I think what happens is the media plays off on what some may seem to be problematic aspects of it. And that to us is troublesome, because we know that activists down there are very willing to work, whether it be to clear pathways. I talked to someone who said they went in and they were helping clean the bathrooms at the local McDonald's. So I think...
But let me flip it on you. If the Tea Party had come in and set a permanent encampment, set up a permanent encampment in a local park in your neighborhood, stopping workers or families or anybody else who used the park from coming and doing, you know, using it the way they usually did, would you be happy about that?
Well, I'd first like to say that I don't think anyone has been stopped from going in and using that park. I've gone down there and met with friends.
It was a wall-to-wall tent city. You know that, right?
Yes, but there are still places to sit. And I think that this provides local officials and the police department with a very convenient way to then go in and use the kind of violence they did, which is unlawful, to clear people out.
But Henley,
during the court, there was an amazing practice, a hearing before Judge Stallman, Justice Stallman, where the city, Brookfield Properties, and the civil libertarian attorneys had an opportunity. It was like a lightning round, Brian. It was really amazing. I got quite an education. And I think that City Attorney Cheryl Neufeld kind of hit a home run when she used the phrase that the protesters had appropriated for themselves the park. That is, by the scale of their physical presence, they had made it impossible for, and this is the rub here, Brookfield Properties is a private property owner, which has a liability because they actually own the park. And we've discussed on this air the kind of odd circumstance that it's a private piece of property that has this amenity that is because they got this major bonus as a developer.
It's
so
a
they
public
have to keep
function.
It right, exactly. So she said what was happening now is that Brookfield had this liability and couldn't maintain it up to city code because of what had happened in terms of the site. Basically, they'd lost control of it. And so it seems that when the city used phrases like human waste and combustible fluids, that seemed to be like the point at which the judge and the tide was turned. And also, I might say, though, the protesters on their side were feeling that they were constructively trying to engage and hadn't been met halfway by the city. So those are the two different sides of the
polarity.
On polarities.
That meeting halfway, I know you spoke to the police deputy commissioner, Paul Brown. What about notice? Were they told that they had to remove their tents? What if they had, as they have in some other cities, even went to the media and said, you have 72 hours to get rid of your tents, your sleeping bags, your tarps. Then you can go back in and protest all you want. But 72 hours to remove the structures, or we're going to go in and get them.
I think their feeling was, at least from the city standpoint, was that they had tried that before, and it built up into this huge tense moment where a conflict seemed inevitable, and then there was a kind of desire to de-escalate.
That was about cleaning
up. Exactly.
The
so
park.
Remember how it built up to this, you know, pins and needles moment.
But then they came to an agreement where the occupiers were going to help them clean.
Well, it wasn't really an agreement. The occupiers went around a campaign with a higher visibility. They already started to some degree before that came to a head. I think the thing here that's important to keep in mind here is that the evening, the police did notice and hand out these flyers and then took action. Individuals who were in the protest chose to remove themselves from the park, weren't arrested. Those that chose to have a more overt form of civil disobedience, chaining themselves together or resisting arrest, were charged based on that. And that was part of their statement, if you will.
WNYC's Bob Henley, covering the story of the eviction of at least the tents and the tarps and the sleeping bags from Zuccotti Park, and Heidi Boghossian, executive director of the National Lawyers Guild, which is providing legal support to the movement. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So, Heidi, the judge rejected Occupy's argument that they should be allowed to pitch tents. Will the protesters appeal through your organization?
I'm sure the protesters will appeal, and if I could just add that on the notice issue, in other jurisdictions around the country, we have seen municipalities working with the protesters to either find an alternate space. Some librarians, for example, in one place have given up their yard, and I think that going in late at night with a few hours' notice is quite different than sitting down and trying to find a place that will let protesters get their message out, but address some of the issues, if they're valid issues, mm-hmm. that the government raises.
But what are your legal grounds for an appeal?
Well, I'm actually not involved with the local New York City chapter that's bringing this, but I'm sure it will be an unreasonable hardship, an obstacle to free speech. They're general issues that we usually raise when we challenge crackdowns on First Amendment activities.
I would want to say that, to your point, Counselor, there is a divergence of results here. Just across the river, almost on the Delaware River in Trenton, the New Jersey Civil Liberties Union won a significant victory, where after a crackdown by police on a state park, similar situation in that the rules were issued after the occupied Trenton folks had started their situation. The judge in that case ruled that they had to go back to the park, they were permitted to be there, and they were given their stuff back, and the city of Trenton is permitting them to have a generator. Now, the scale's much smaller, but I think that you see there's a varying result.
Here is Brendan calling from Zuccotti Park. Brendan, you're on WNYC. I know you've been on before. Thanks for calling again.
Thanks for having me on. I'm actually not at Zuccotti now. I've been up for the past 3 days, so
okay.
I actually slept. But I was...
You were there, though, during the middle of the night raid?
Yes, my shift ended at 11:30, and I went home, and I got a call at 1:15 by Casper, who's one of my guys down there. And I do head of de-escalation security down there. And he told me it was happening with 45 minutes notice, basically.
Tell me that title again, head of de-escalation security?
Yes, that's what we've been securing the park since it started, using that philosophy and using that word.
What's the philosophy? People would be interested. What's the philosophy?
The philosophy is nonviolent, like the movement is. It uses respect, like respecting a person's body, respecting their mind, or respecting with your mouth, like you don't curse at people if there's an outbreak of violence or bad behavior. And if there's like a real crime that happens, like we've had a sexual assault happen, we direct the person who's been assaulted to go straight to the police, which is all over the place. And we just try to work with everyone in the park, because we also try to maintain people's right to assemble. So it's a punch and a kiss, because you have free food and you had tents and you had all types of things there for people to come and enjoy and protest. But at the same time, you attract all types of other people that don't care about those things or Wall Street. They're actually there just to hang out, and some of them are causing trouble. So it was getting harder and harder with the tents to secure it and assess situations correctly. So,
which is exactly the city's argument, Brendan.
Yeah,
I got to tell you, since the occupation started, people that occupied Wall Street knew that at any time we could be removed for any kind of illegal reason. Like, we're not stupid. Like, we understand that we're protesting against a system that doesn't want it to happen. So they're going to find reasons and loopholes and all types of things to do what they have to do. They all have all their friends on the phone. They're going to do what they're going to do. But we move more fluidly. It's like we occupy space because it's symbolic, but it's also a reality. There's an occupation there. But we're making a statement that we are taking space back, like we're taking justice back economically. It's like, wait a minute, there's all this space here. It's owned privately, you know. And they have tactically the higher ground.
Let me get Bob Henley back in.
I wanted to your point, there. The police do recognize that there was an affirmative effort by people like yourself to try to patrol and keep the place safe. Do you know about an incident that happened apparently last week where an EMT was responding to what they believed to be a call that came from someone within the movement about an emotionally disturbed person? A scuffle resulted, and the EMT ended up getting an ankle or a leg broken. Are you aware of that interaction?
Yes, I am. I know what happened with that. The EMT actually tried to help remove the individual and stepped through, I think it was a barricade or
a ladder, I guess. Yeah.
A ladder, exactly, and got caught in the rungs and just was carrying the person and stepping wrongly or stepping in an errant way with that load. Broke his shin, I believe.
Yeah, it seems sure that's from when I've talked to my source at law enforcement, and like even working with you guys in the sexual assault, there was also a witness intimidation situation where an individual had come to want to do drugs and was rebuffed by some of the activists, and that resulted in assault. So they were trying to work with you, and I think they just felt that it had gotten beyond the good intention ability of yourself to patrol the space.
Oh, sir, I totally agree. 100% agree, because the thing about this particular demonstration is that it sits there like a sitting duck. It's not on the street all the time. So the thing is that you've got hundreds of people in tents. You don't know what's going on behind closed doors. Plus, I was concerned about strep throat, flu, all types of things that are going to happen as the cold weather comes, because a lot of these people have become wayward, and a lot of the kids came from other places and have nowhere else to go. So it was becoming a very concerning, like a disconcerting issue. All the politics became about policing the park, and it became all about that, and then it was not about Wall Street anymore.
So did the mayor, in a way, do the movement a favor?
Again, everything's a punch and a kiss with this kind of thing, because it's out there in the open. And yes, I'm looking at the assets of this. We're still all-inclusive. But if you're not here to demonstrate against Occupy Wall Street, if you're not here to hold accountable entities at Wall Street that created financial instruments to steal money and get laws passed, we got to move forward here.
So, Brendan, before I let you go, what do you think happens next?
Well, what happens next is, as you know, we tried a 6th and Canal yesterday. That didn't work well. But in other ways, it did work.
As an alternative space.
Yes. So next is, you know, we protest. We keep doing stuff. Everyone's in touch with everyone else. We have media contacts. It's only gotten bigger. So it's been 2 months, and we have so much bandwidth now that we're just going to use all of our resources and keep showing up at stuff and keep doing stuff and keeping it on its
toes. It looks like the churches, too, are stepping up. It looks like you have kind of what's happening is this looks like it's going to evolve, tell me if I'm wrong, into a kind of more like a vigil, which is going to require a lot more discipline and organization, where you count on building liaison and allies with folks that have space where you can sleep. Is that where this is going?
Well, we have union support and clergy support, and yes, because churches like Middle Collegiate Church has offered space to sleep at night, and other churches are stepping forward, St. Mary's in Harlem, and it's like space is now starting to be given to us. As long as we stay nonviolent and stay on focus, it's going to work out.
I hear there's going to be an effort tomorrow on the second month anniversary of the occupation to try to prevent them from ringing the opening bell on Wall Street. Is that accurate?
I'm sure there will be. I mean, we're still going to go forward with the action, but I'm sure there will be something to that effect, and we'll have to nuance it and do that dance as we will. Hopefully we remain nonviolent and remain, you know, doing what we're doing to get the message across. But at this point, even if we fail in our actions, like yesterday at Canal, it's still sending the message. It's always a win-win. So we just try to do it with respect, and we're just trying to get the message out.
Disruptive, so, but not with violence.
Yes, absolutely not. We totally don't want to use violence.
Brendan, I really appreciate you calling in again. Keep calling, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Brendan, who has been spending a lot of time at Zuccotti Park. Let me go back to Heidi Boghossian from the National Lawyers Guild, which is providing legal services to the Occupy movement across the country. Is there a national strategy? Is the National Lawyers Guild fighting piece by piece in each city where something's happening in Oakland and something different is happening in New York and something else somewhere else? Or do you have a national unified strategy?
We're dealing with each issue on a very local basis. So, for example, in Occupy Fort Myers, we filed a lawsuit 2 days ago against shutting that encampment down. We have lawyers in L.A. who had actually challenged LAPD practices years ago at the 2000 DNC. They're working closely with protesters there. We filed a lawsuit in Oakland. So depending on the number of attorneys and the number of activists and the nature of the local laws and how they're being enforced, we adopt our strategies accordingly.
Bob, what happened with journalists?
Well, I did speak with the police department. We did have reports that several journalists were taken into custody. The NYPD's take on this is that, as you referred before, the caller from Occupy Wall Street talked about the effort to get a Canal Street. The police department says that the reporters were taken into custody there because the police basically, it was a situation where the protesters, according to police, I've been confirmed it independently, cut a chain link fence and then tried to take possession of the vacant lot there. And the journalist covering the story joined them. And then as police went about the business of arresting the protesters, according to police, again, we haven't corroborated this, the reporters did not move, responding to police requests. According to the NYPD, all of them got their credentials back eventually. We're going to try to verify that today. There were other cases where there was a moment where they did really draw a hard line and prevent people from getting close to the park, although the police say prior to that along Church Street and other areas, they did provide the media opportunities to document what was happening. I might say there's a tremendous amount of footage out there about what happened. Also, the police said they did not use tear gas, that there was a smoke condition on the site related to something that happened at Occupy Wall Street. The other thing we've heard that was out there was that they restricted airspace to not let traffic helicopters document it, and the police say that's not true. So we're going to try to reach out for the journalists and get their individual story today.
Is this something the National Lawyers Guild is on, denial of the press's First Amendment rights in a formal legal sense or not really?
We've always been concerned about keeping members of the press away from police activities, so we're concerned about it. I'm not sure what legal action we'll take, but if this continues on a large-scale effort, I'm sure we will.
Bob, real quick, politically, how do you think Bloomberg comes out of this? Is this his Tompkins Square Park? or something else?
Well, so far we don't see huge injuries coming out of what happened. We don't see the images from Oakland. And I think also...
And by the way, Heidi used the word police, the term police violence
right,
earlier.
Right, right. We didn't...
Is that confirmed?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what happened in Oakland?
No,
I think
here.
Oh, no. I think that there's a question now about how much... they reacted, and we're now trying to sort through that by first-hand accounts. I think it's important. We didn't mention this in the conversation. It's the 1984 U.S. Supreme Court case involving the National Park Service when they had a situation where the Community for Creative Nonviolence wanted to dramatize the fate of the homeless by camping out in the National Mall. The Supreme Court didn't permit that. So I think that that's kind of the universe, legal universe they're bumping up against.
WNYC's Bob Henley continuing to cover Occupy Wall Street and the city's response. Heidi Boghossian, Executive Director of the National Lawyers Guild, providing legal support to the Occupy movement. Thank you both.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up next. After 20 years of writing for The New Yorker, Lawrence Wechsler on his body of essays about human rights, and then Joe Nocera on Joe Paterno. Stay with us.